Gracias a cada uno de ustedes por su presencia aquí en la primera sesión regional de Habla Español. Disculpe la demora, me dicen que hay un problema con la traducción al inglés y portugués. Están trabajando, van a intentar arreglarlo, pero... Sí, pero hay algunos de habla inglés que tal vez no, pero... Con la hora yo pienso que debemos empezar. Me dicen que van a estar trabajando y yo voy a salir para ayudar y vamos a ver si podemos tener la traducción. We're going to see if we can get the translation working. I know it doesn't work. I was just explaining that. They're working on the translation, and I will, as soon as we get started, I'll slip out and see if I can help too. And get it running. We'll let you know as soon as it starts working. But with the hour being what it is, we probably need to get started. Vamos. Los tres van a presentar en español. Or los cuatro. Sí.
Prefiero yo hablando portuñol.
Portuñol. Bueno, otra vez bienvenidos. Gracias por la paciencia con la primera sesión regional. A veces tenemos que hacer algunos arreglos. Me llamo Scott Isaacson. Soy uno de los que ayuda aquí con el Centro de Estudios de BYU. Es mi honor de darles la bienvenida y también de presentar los cuatro ponentes que tenemos hoy presentando sus presentaciones. Como ustedes ya tienen el currículum escrito en el programa, no voy a repetir todo eso por razones de tiempo, pero quiero presentar los cuatro y después vamos a tener sus presentaciones y esperamos tener tiempo al final para preguntas y debate. Primero vamos a escuchar las palabras de Marcos González Sánchez, es profesor de Derecho Eclesiástico de la Universidad Autónoma de Madrid. Después de él, Juan Martín Vives, es abogado y profesor y administrador en la Universidad Adventista de Plata. Del Plata, se dice. De Plata, de Argentina. Y después, Efrén Chávez Hernández, profesor de Derecho de la Universidad Autónoma de México. Y al final, Víctor Álvarez es abogado y profesor de Constitucional y es actualmente director general del Escritorio Jurídico Centro de Estudios Administrativos. Vamos a dar la palabra a Marcos.
Gracias. Bueno. Distinguidos colegas, queridos amigos, mis primeras palabras tienen que ser de agradecimiento al profesor Durhan, agradecimiento al profesor Scott y a todos los miembros del International Center for Law and Religion Studies por haberme invitado y haberme dado la posibilidad de estar aquí hoy y compartir con todos vosotros este fantástico congreso. El título de mi ponencia es Leyes de Libertad Religiosa en Europa y América. Y entonces entramos directamente en materia. Un verdadero Estado democrático y de derecho es aquel que garantiza y reconoce los derechos humanos. Y entre todos ellos, el derecho fundamental de libertad religiosa ocupa un primerísimo lugar. La libertad religiosa se consolida como un derecho fundamental en todas las constituciones y también se reconoce así en todos los documentos internacionales de derechos humanos, tanto a nivel internacional universal como a nivel regional. Sucede, y aquí radica el objeto de mi intervención, que algunos países tienen leyes de libertad religiosa. Estas leyes desarrollan el contenido de la libertad religiosa, tanto la vertiente individual como la vertiente colectiva. No quiere decir que estos países que tienen ley de libertad religiosa la reconozcan más que aquellos que no tienen ley, pero desde luego sí se puede llegar a la conclusión de que estas leyes son un instrumento muy útil para la consolidación de los estados democráticos y, en segundo lugar, son un paso más en el mero reconocimiento como un derecho fundamental. A continuación voy a describir las principales aportaciones de las leyes de libertad religiosa de Europa y de América, de forma muy resumida para que dé tiempo dentro de los límites que nos han dado. La realidad es que son pocas las leyes de libertad religiosa que hay como tales. En Europa hay una ley, en España, en Portugal y en países del Este. Voy a empezar por Europa y voy a empezar en primer lugar a comentar la ley de libertad religiosa española. Es una ley de 1980, por lo tanto tiene 36 años de aplicación, 33 años de experiencia. Es una ley muy breve, tiene 8 artículos. Y cabría destacar de la Ley Española de Libertad Religiosa 4 aspectos. Por supuesto, desarrolla el contenido del derecho individual, pero habría que destacar, en primer lugar, que crea un registro de entidades religiosas. En segundo lugar, que establece la posibilidad de que se puedan celebrar acuerdos con el Estado español por parte de las confesiones religiosas. Y una tercera cuestión, que crea una Comisión Asesora de Libertad Religiosa, que es un órgano administrativo que, en definitiva, analizan todas las posibles dificultades que tiene la materia. La Ley de Libertad Religiosa de Portugal es del año 2001. Es una ley muy extensa, posiblemente es la ley de libertad religiosa actualmente más interesante y tiene un reconocimiento también extenso del derecho individual de libertad religiosa y también cabría destacar que da bastantes derechos y reconoce bastantes derechos a las confesiones religiosas que quedan inscritas en el registro. Igualmente, prevé esta ley la posibilidad de celebrar acuerdos y también crea una comisión asesora de libertad religiosa. Por lo tanto, vemos cómo la ley española y la portuguesa son bastante similares, pero habría que destacar la portuguesa en cuanto a más desarrollada. Después, dentro de Europa, hay varios países del Este que tienen también leyes. En primer lugar, Eslovenia. Eslovenia tiene una ley de libertad religiosa del año 2007 y establece la separación entre el Estado y las iglesias. Establece un régimen de igualdad, pero a pesar de este régimen de igualdad y de separación, establece también un régimen de cooperación, en virtud de la cual se establecen partidas presupuestarias para realizar asistencia religiosa, financiación de la educación, etc. Chequia tiene también una ley de libertad religiosa del año 2002. Es una ley que protege a las iglesias tradicionales y pone de manifiesto sobre todo la cautela a los nuevos movimientos religiosos. Por ello establece unos requisitos bastante exigentes para la inscripción en el registro. Concretamente, establece que toda confesión que quiera inscribirse debe tener un mínimo de 300 fieles y 10 años registrada. Hungría tiene una ley de libertad de conciencia y religión del año 2011, es una ley muy reciente, y de forma parecida a la ley checa, también establece bastantes cautelas para la inscripción de las confesiones religiosas y la Constitución de Hungría del año 2012 está en la misma línea de reconocimiento de la religiosidad en la vida pública. Rumanía tiene una ley de libertad religiosa del año 2006, se aprobó poco antes del ingreso de Rumanía en la Unión Europea y presenta un texto de apertura y desvinculación al régimen comunista. Es una ley donde se ve claramente que la Iglesia ortodoxa tiene un gran peso y se establece un régimen piramidal de reconocimiento de confesiones religiosas. Por supuesto, también el derecho individual de libertad religiosa está plenamente reconocido. Bulgaria tiene una ley de confesiones del año 2002. Bulgaria también, la Iglesia ortodoxa, tiene reconocimiento a nivel constitucional, por lo tanto no es necesaria su inscripción en el registro de confesiones religiosas, y es una ley que también prevé bastantes ayudas a las confesiones que se inscriben y financiación estatal en distintas materias. Polonia tiene una ley de libertad de garantías de libertad de conciencia y confesión de 1989. En Polonia la Iglesia Católica ocupa un lugar privilegiado y también se establecen acuerdos con protestantes, judíos y musulmanes, el Estado con estas confesiones religiosas. Se puede definir Polonia como un Estado también bastante cooperador. Me quedan dos: Eslovaquia, una ley de libertad religiosa del año 91, que tiene también una visión muy positiva de los grupos religiosos, y el último país sería Croacia. Croacia, que tiene una ley de libertad religiosa reciente. Croacia es el último país que ha ingresado en la Unión Europea, hace el número 28, y habría que destacar que ha entrado, repito, recientemente en la Unión Europea, pero cabría destacar las reformas legislativas que ha hecho Croacia precisamente para entrar en la Unión Europea. Y dentro de esas reformas está el reconocimiento pleno de la libertad religiosa como un derecho fundamental conforme al artículo 40 de su Constitución de 1991. La ley que tiene es de 2002 y habilita al gobierno para celebrar pactos con las diferentes confesiones religiosas y se reconoce en definitiva la separación, la neutralidad y la laicidad positiva del Estado. Por tanto, como principal conclusión de los países que tienen leyes de libertad religiosa en la Unión Europea, cabría decir que todos ellos son países que coinciden en que vienen de regímenes autoritarios, tanto España como Portugal, como los países del Este, que los países del Este pues rompen con la antigua URSS y con la antigua Yugoslavia. Por lo tanto, las leyes han sido instrumentos que han utilizado realmente para desarrollar el derecho fundamental de libertad religiosa en momentos históricos donde este derecho apenas se conocía. Por lo tanto, los países que tienen ley, como dije antes, no protegen más la libertad religiosa, pero sin duda alguna destacan por el reconocimiento de la pluralidad religiosa. En cuanto a América, las leyes de libertad religiosa en América también tienen como objetivo principal potenciar la libertad religiosa. Las leyes de libertad religiosa en América vienen también de países donde la libertad religiosa pues era una situación de conflicto, una situación de regímenes autoritarios. Sucede, por ejemplo, que no es el caso de Estados Unidos. Estados Unidos tiene una ley de restauración de libertad religiosa del año 93 y esta ley, sin embargo, lo que buscaba era ampliar la interpretación restrictiva que había hecho la Corte Suprema de Estados Unidos, que restringía un poco la situación, y entonces se hizo esta ley del año 93 con la finalidad de que el gobierno no gravara la libertad religiosa. Luego, los países latinoamericanos que tienen ley es México, una ley de asociaciones religiosas y culto público del 92, donde en esta ley se recoge el principio histórico de separación Iglesia-Estado, se reconoce, en definitiva, ese principio de Estado laico. Es una ley bastante extensa y cabría destacar, entre otras cuestiones, que es restrictiva en algunas situaciones. Por ejemplo, en la realización de actos de culto fuera de los templos, prohíbe la objeción de conciencia y no reconoce la posibilidad de que las confesiones religiosas tengan medios de comunicación. Pero, sin duda alguna, hay que destacar que esta ley del año 92 es un paso importantísimo respecto de lo que había antes en México. Colombia tiene una ley de 1994, es una ley muy similar a la ley española de libertad religiosa, reconoce el orden público como límite a la libertad, reconoce un amplio catálogo de derechos individuales y establece también unos requisitos para la inscripción y también la posibilidad de celebrar acuerdos con las confesiones. Establece en definitiva un régimen también piramidal, como sucede en España, donde en la cúspide se situaría la Iglesia Católica, debajo las confesiones que tienen acuerdo y después las confesiones inscritas. Chile tiene una ley de 1999, contiene normas generales, reconoce ampliamente los derechos individuales, también reconoce la forma de adquirir personalidad jurídica a las confesiones religiosas y regula también el patrimonio cultural. En Chile sucede que constitucionalmente la Iglesia Católica y la Iglesia Ortodoxa de Antioquía ocupan un lugar preferente que hace que no tengan necesidad de inscribirse en el registro. La Ley de Libertad Religiosa de Perú es de 2010, es la ley de libertad religiosa más reciente en Latinoamérica y de las más recientes del mundo. Es una ley que consta de 15 artículos, también reconoce ampliamente la libertad religiosa y también establece un catálogo de confesiones. Quizá hubiera sido bueno que esta ley describiera el concepto de notorio arraigo, pero en definitiva sí es una ley bastante completa. Por lo tanto, vemos cómo en América, no solo latina, sino también Estados Unidos, también hay leyes de libertad religiosa. Y también habría que destacar que hay varios países que tienen proyectos de ley de libertad religiosa, lo que quiere decir que es una cuestión muy interesante y es una cuestión que los países están muy interesados. Por ejemplo, en República Dominicana hubo un proyecto de 2008, sucede que en República Dominicana en 2010 se modificó la Constitución, se garantiza ampliamente la libertad religiosa, se reconoce la libertad religiosa, pero sucede que tiene una historia donde todavía existen ciertos vestigios de confesionalidad. Existe una invocación a Dios en el preámbulo, cosa que sucede en la mayoría de constituciones, pero hay más cuestiones. Por ejemplo, el lema del himno nacional es Dios, Patria, Libertad, y la Biblia está abierta por el Evangelio de San Juan en el escudo nacional. Luego tiene un concepto también de que el derecho a la vida es inviolable desde el momento de la concepción, lo cual es también curioso porque esto casa con el pensamiento de la Iglesia Católica. Sin embargo, repito, hubo un proyecto de ley del año 2008, un proyecto de ley de asociaciones, que quedó ahí parado porque hubo elecciones en 2009 y, en definitiva, lo importante de este proyecto es que intentaba conseguir una equiparación de las confesiones religiosas. Venezuela también tuvo un proyecto que durante el año 2012 se discutió en la subcomisión de cultos, También era un proyecto muy debatido, un proyecto que participaron las diferentes confesiones religiosas y que intentaba también equiparar a los grupos religiosos. La Iglesia Católica en Venezuela tiene un concordato del año 64 y, en definitiva, la Iglesia Católica tiene una posición, si no privilegiada, de superioridad. Este proyecto intentaba también equiparar a las confesiones. Y, por último, citar un proyecto en Uruguay del año 2010 que se presentó en la Cámara, en la Comisión de Derechos Humanos de la Cámara de los Diputados, que sobre todo lo que pretende es desarrollar la libertad de conciencia, el reconocimiento de la objeción de conciencia. Está paralizado, seguramente no quede en nada, pero hay que destacar que se ha presentado también ante la Comisión. Por lo tanto, vemos cómo las leyes de libertad religiosa existen en América, existen proyectos y existen también otros países que tienen proyectos, como es Argentina, que desde el año 90 está luchando por un proyecto que no acaba de conseguir. Está también Bolivia desde 2001, Ecuador ha presentado varios, el último en 2011, y en Europa también Italia, es un país que hace años que lleva trabajando en un posible ley de libertad religiosa. Conclusiones. La libertad religiosa es un derecho humano universal que en algunos países europeos y americanos ha sido desarrollada mediante leyes de libertad religiosa. En términos generales, estas leyes de libertad religiosa reconocen el derecho individual y el derecho colectivo, los principios de libertad religiosa, reconoce la autonomía de las confesiones religiosas, establece limitaciones a la libertad religiosa como es el orden público, establece la posibilidad de celebrar acuerdos con el Estado y también crea normalmente comisiones de libertad religiosa. En el marco de la titularidad individual habría que destacar que las leyes de libertad religiosa reconocen derechos más amplios que lo que hacen los textos constitucionales y lo que hacen los textos internacionales ratificados por los países. Y en el marco de la titularidad colectiva vemos cómo establecen un catálogo de confesiones religiosas y hay otras leyes, sin embargo, que establecen una separación estricta. En cualquier caso, es muy interesante y muy importante este dato porque es relevante detectar cuáles son las confesiones, sobre todo si tenemos en cuenta que la mayoría de las normas que da el Estado en relación con la religión van relacionadas con esa vertiente colectiva. En el marco de la titularidad colectiva, lo más importante vemos que es la creación de una comisión, la posibilidad de celebrar acuerdos con el Estado y, en definitiva, que son piezas clave del sistema de relaciones Estado-confesiones religiosas. Por tanto, aquellos países que tienen ley no necesariamente la desarrollan más que las que no la tienen, sin embargo, vemos que es un elemento muy importante y que una aportación relevante en la cuestión de la consolidación de los derechos humanos. Las leyes de libertad religiosa, en definitiva, establecen un sistema de libertad religiosa marcado sobre todo por la laicidad del Estado, pero también con los principios de separación y de neutralidad. Y, desde luego, apoyan lo que es el tema de la igualdad. En definitiva, considero que las leyes de libertad religiosa son un instrumento muy válido, con más virtudes que defectos, que colaboran en la ordenación de una sociedad plural, que permiten el desarrollo de diferentes creencias y diferentes grupos religiosos, y en definitiva, que tratan de impedir políticas intransigentes de los Estados. Muchísimas gracias.
Bueno, buenos días a todos. En primer lugar, agradecer a los anfitriones, aquí a la universidad, especialmente en la persona del profesor Scott y Saxon. Agradecerles por la fantástica recepción que nos han dado y especialmente no solo por habernos recibido aquí en la universidad en el simposio, sino por habernos permitido también participar un poco de lo que es la vida interna de la Iglesia. La verdad es que lo valoro, lo disfruté mucho y lo valoro mucho, y creo que todos lo hacemos y quiero agradecerles por eso. La verdad es que es un honor poder participar de un panel tan distinguido y tener también una audiencia tan de personas tan prestigiosas, a muchos de quienes conozco y admiro. Y quisiera presentarles hoy, venir a proponerles una idea desde un punto de vista académico. Estuve testeando un poco mis ideas en la previa y ya varias veces me han dicho de que tal vez es demasiado idealista lo que voy a presentar. De todas formas, esta es una mesa de scholars, una mesa de académicos, donde venimos a presentar no realidades tal vez políticas, sino realidades desde un punto de vista ideal. Y lo que voy a presentar es tal vez es una utopía, pero les pido que me permitan contarles mi utopía y a ver si ustedes también pueden compartirla. El título de mi presentación es Derechos y Humanos, pero Desiguales. Aquellos que conocen Argentina y que tal vez tengan algunos añitos se acordarán de este lema, este eslogan, ¿no? Derechos y Humanos. Es un eslogan que propuso la... De paso, hablando de proponer, yo me había propuesto ponerme un temporizador aquí, discúlpenme. Pero será la forma de que no me pase con el tiempo. La dictadura militar, el gobierno militar que hubo en Argentina entre años 76 y 83, propuso, frente a las constantes cuestionamientos que había acerca del respeto a los derechos humanos en Argentina, propuso como medida de propaganda este lema, ¿no? Derechos y humanos. Los argentinos somos derechos y humanos, así que no nos vengan a decir que aquí no se... Mientras tanto se violaban sistemáticamente los derechos humanos, ¿no? Era un eslogan que tenía el gobierno. Lo traje a colación porque, como mencionó Marcos acerca de la ley de España, la ley de Argentina, que no es una ley de libertad religiosa, sino una ley de registro de cultos, es del año 1980, ¿no? En 1980 hubieron dos grandes problemas en Argentina. La ley de cultos y el nacimiento de un servidor. Son las dos grandes catástrofes que han ocurrido en Argentina en ese año. ¿Cómo? No, mi madre, no, parecía. En ese año, a diferencia de España, que había salido del gobierno dictatorial en el 78, ¿78? 78, sí. Argentina todavía estaba en un gobierno autocrático, en un gobierno dictatorial. La mayoría de las leyes que regulan las religiones en Argentina todavía provienen de aquel periodo. Entonces, cuando yo me pongo a pensar en los derechos humanos y la relación entre la religión y los derechos humanos, no puedo dejar de pensar en
el with the human rights, we cannot think that the legal regimen that regulates the relations between a state and religion and in church, the freedom of religion in Argentina has been violated openly. And so because I want to talk to you a little bit about the relation between human rights and the right to equality. And in Argentina, there are different. We have the Catholic religion, which has a privileged status based on the constitution, and the rest of religions they go through another means. It is very tight woven into their human rights without the idea of equality. It means that the human rights came, they were born when the human being accepted that we are all equal in dignity, and therefore the simple fact that we are human beings have basic rights. And so the equality is the fundamental basis for the human rights. In the other side, the right to equality is one of the fundamental human rights. Therefore, to think in human rights and not to think in the idea of equality is difficult. And therefore, I want to propose to think and to ponder on the system of inequality that exists in my country, maybe not in other countries, but in regard to religions. And I would like to mention briefly which ones are those equalities. I don't want to make a long list, but I want to mention that. And first of all, the Catholic Church. And I apologize for speaking of the Catholic Church, but that's what they mention in the law. But the laws mention this in this way. And the Catholic Church has been mentioned in the Constitution and the Civil Code, and it has a character of a public entity as the states, the provinces, and the same way the Catholic Church, but not the rest of the religions. They have a discrimination system a little bit complicated that I'm going to explain to you right now. For the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, there is an assignment that has been developed for the bishops and the state. They have an assignment specifically from the state to the bishops, and there is a monthly assignment for the state to the bishops for the priests that are not included. Can you hear? And their work days or hours are established, and there is an assignment, a financial assignment that the state provides to foster the formation of the cleric, and that means those who are preparing or studying to be priests. And there is an assignment in the state budget for those who cooperate with the Catholic Church, those who are managed by the archbishop, by the bishop, and the Catholic clerics, and they have a special assignment that allows them to travel in the same way that do the congressmen. And I did this very fast, quick catalog to show that there is an obvious inequality between the Catholic Church and the rest of the religions. In any way, that the fact that there is an inequality doesn't mean necessarily that there can be, that it has to be problematic. Even when this inequality, that the right accepts different categories and it gives the right to establish this, as long as these categories are established or declared. And basically, as we are summarizing, these fundamentals are in a historic order, because the Catholic Church is set in the Argentine territory before the Argentine state was formed, and in a historic order as well, because as they went through the historic periods, the state has taken from the church's possessions. They have done taken those belongings, and it has justified that it has, and I don't think none of the both arguments have been established, because they don't find a relationship between the existence of the church and the state and the sustaining of the situation until now. And I mean that there are also slaves in the Argentine state, and there are not anymore. So those are things that they have to clarify. And regard to this question of expropriations, when they did this, they paid what they had to pay and then closed those accounts once and for all. And there are other group of reasons, this sociological reason, and they are easy to understand. And most of the inhabitants of the nation belong to the Catholic cult. Therefore, we have to support that cult. It gives me the impression that it's an argument also very... The religion that the people profess is a contingency. And today, tomorrow, there will be another one, and there will be another one in a way that they will be another one, and there are people who receive a religious strength, and they won't change their constitution to support another religion instead of the other one. But the most important of all of this is this fundament.
Que no son, este, me parece a mí,
too much, too strong. They don't
justificar que existe una diferencia de trato.
Is a difference based on religion. And finally, what the constitution, Argentine constitution is speaking of, and other complementary situation is that there is a difference in the treatment towards people based on the election or religious conviction of that person. And I think that's where we have the problem. Do you understand? The state says, I'm going to treat you in this way because you are from this religion, and I'm going to treat you different because you are from another religion. Whatever justification that they are, they don't seem to be strong enough as to justify this difference of treatment. Allow me to say some words in regard to the concept of equality and the concept of difference. And then we have to treat in the same way to all people in different circumstances. And maybe you have heard this phrase. It's a very known phrase that I think we need to kind of turn around a little bit. First, we need to treat people the same way in different circumstances. They confuse equality with identity. You know that because of this, we cannot say that there are two exact the same identical people. We are equal because even with our differences, there is a criteria that makes us the same. I'm your equal. My friends from Brazil are the same, and they are the same, but they are not identical. And they have to treat them in same and different circumstances. And so we need, what does it mean to be equal, and what are those circumstances that makes them equal? And the second thing that I want to say in regard to equality is that we don't have to be confused with difference and inequality. And that's what I was saying before, that the fact that I'm different from someone else doesn't mean that the state has to treat me in a different way. And exactly in my differences, that's where we need to find or to search for something that makes them to treat me the same way that the other person. And in the same way, a treatment is the content. And when they say we treat the same to those who are the same and say in the same circumstances, I don't want to be treated in the same. I want to review that the content of that law because it's a formal, the equality of treatment, the quality of content. And when the legislations come, they have to take into account the right to equality to apply and those norms and then apply them to the whole world or at least to the rest of the people. What we have is the norms or rules of content that are not the same or not treating the same. And my question is, these justifications that we are given to justify the differences of treatment and content that exist in the Argentine legislature, and I think that we have to establish a criteria. In fact, that's what they do in human rights matters in the United States Supreme Court and the Human Rights European Commission to establish in a concrete case to see if they are being if they are having discrimination and establishing the an irrational or arbitrary conscience, or if these inequalities come because they because of their religious beliefs. Now, this exists a lot in the Supreme Court of the United States. They have the criteria of strict scrutiny. Maybe there is a standard to know if they are affecting the right to equality, but for this criteria, I think they have to have into account, take into account that there is a persuasion of discrimination when they are utilizing categories like race, like the national origin, the sexual orientation, like the religion, and to establish this reglement, rules or norms. If I tell you that a specific race has to pay a tax to support all the homosexuals, or the blondes have to pay a tax, that the blondes have to pay a tax to support the blacks, but if the Protestants or the evangelicals have to pay a tax to support all the Catholics, there is no problem there. And so, and I'm sorry, I'm talking about the Argentine reality, and I know that this applies to other countries in a proportion, you know, proportional way. And give me just 1 second. Alfajores is like a dessert, like a treat in Argentina. And you know how they? Do you know how we give away? How do we give away or kind of like share an alfajor or this treat? And they don't know who is John Rawls, but they use this. This method, they cut the alfajor, which is like a cookie, and they cut it in half. The one that cut doesn't know which half will eat, and so they try to cut as much in the middle, and because the one who doesn't cut will choose, and so they are trying to cut that in the same proportion. And when I talk about these things, I'm not talking about personal convenience or for in favor of another religion, but what I'm saying it in general terms because I think that's why we need to apply it to other countries. So being the fact that the religion is a suspicious criteria, it is a criteria, if we use it to establish differences, there is a strong presumption of discrimination, and this criteria to determine in every case to see if we are being applying discrimination, we have to be strict. And at the end, I'm not going to take any more time, but I was telling you some things about the reasons why there is religious inequality. But if we don't want to discriminate, we have to apply a very strict criteria that can be in different standards. Do you think that is justified that there is a religious inequality in Argentina? I don't think it is. My conclusion is that the inequality, religious inequality in Argentina is discriminatory, and therefore it goes against the fundamental right that exists in terms of human rights, which is the right of equality and the right for laws to be the same for everybody. And let me finish by saying, and kind of weaving into with the other things that I said, I know that it's a utopia, that I'm what I'm saying. I know that it is enviable that this exists, but 200 years ago or 250 years ago, when we started talking about maybe it's not that good that we have slavery, maybe it's good that women, men and women are the same. If we could see the situation in that moment, I am sure that politically it would be very hard to do. And the important thing is not that it's politically good or not, but it's if it's the right thing to do or not. So I ask you the following thing. If you don't agree with me, I accept your ideas and we talk about it and you can convince me. But please, I ask you to allow me to dream and to express the idea that the world can be changed and that we can have a world where everybody can be the same. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm happy to be here. I add my own gratefulness to all the organizers and everybody who has participated so far in this wonderful Congress. I am truly happy for all the wonderful attentions we've received. Thank you, everybody. And thank you for being here. Truly, your presence is... It shows that you want to make things better, to do things better for in each one of our countries. And well, my proposal today, it's titled Liberty of Expression in Religious Liberty, Confrontation or Collaboration. This is an analysis of case studies in Mexico. In Mexico, as Dr. Marcos mentioned, we have a board which is acceptable, but still has a lot to do better. However, we have the question, how does this work in reality? How is it applied and how can certain rights be seen being acted? Well, my proposal will be around these 5 points, a proposal in which I will mention a couple unfortunate cases which we've had in Mexico, particularly Mexico City. We will also do an analysis that may be helpful to use it in future laws. Next is 2 positive cases, and then my conclusion. In my proposal, I note how can a public worker coerce liberty of expression in a group or a church in Mexico. Mexico is a religiously free state, which means they respect all religions and denominations. And so the question arises, can a public worker with the power invested in him coerce the liberty of any group or church? How must a worker like this react as they face situations or opinions that are contrary to what he believes? As I mentioned, everybody in this state has the right to profess or not profess whatever religion or beliefs they see fit best in their lives. How must he or she react as there are reactions to what they believe or contrary to what they believe? Can we attack the rights of one by tolerating the rights of others? Is it valid that in such a state, a public worker receives or gives insults to any such group of religion or beliefs? What must the attitude be as they head the initiatives of these groups to resolve social problems? So here I present these 2 unfortunate case studies that happened in Mexico, specifically Mexico City. First, a few years ago, Emilio Álvarez y Casa, who defended human rights in Mexico against the Catholic Church in November 2006 through April 2007. What happened? Well, we know that anybody, any denomination or person has the right to express their opinions. And given the negative opinion from the Catholic Church and other groups against the approval of homosexual unions, this individual expressed himself in a demeaning way against the opinion of the Catholic Church, saying the church should not opine. They need to fix their own pedophile problems inside of the church. So now this declaration, I think, is very unfortunate from who should have been protecting the liberty of expression, regardless of whether he believes or doesn't believe. This is not the way, in my point of view, insulting or saying you shouldn't opine. Let's not disqualify and bring in other issues that are not related. Whatever is being discussed in a democratic state, the approval of a lay, it is okay to listen to all opinions. It's respectful. It's worthy. Now that would be the legislative power who ultimately approves whatever needs to be approved. But again, to not disqualify or insult. This worker censored the liberty of expression from the Catholic Church. He said the Church should not express regarding abortion in Mexico City. And this caused media wars, a very, very sad situation in a democratic environment, because this created friction in our society, including hatred towards that religion. Such worker does not have the right to create this environment of confrontation and hatred. Another unfortunate case is the one of Marcelo Ebrard. In August through October in 2010, he was involved in a war of disqualifications against the Archbishop of Guadalajara. This worker, against the critics that were received, received by the Catholic authority, he replied with a demand which did not prosper, but he also insulted the cardinal in Guadalajara. This is another unfortunate attitude from someone who should have applied or support the law of respect in all these differences. In my point of view, these different reflections in human liberty and expression, a public worker must not block the rights of others or disqualify a religious group or church to give their opinion against anything that affects the general audience or public. Again, this creates confrontation, and again, this is an unfortunate attitude. Okay, well, in my point of view, these two cases, I think, bring these two reflections. Again, as we look at human rights from an international perspective, a public worker must not does not have the right to disqualify the rights of others or a religious group who expresses an opinion that goes against what they believe themselves. Liberty of expression, freedom of expression is manifested and it gives people the freedom to show their beliefs. We cannot prevent anybody from opining by saying. Now, the second reflection, a civil worker must respect all churches or denominations independently of whether they share points of view. A civil worker is there to serve everybody, not just those who share his values or beliefs. Again, a civil worker works for the well-being of everybody, not just those who are in agreement with his ideas. He must look for reconciliation and respectful dialogue, not the disqualification or insults that have happened. So what happens with civil workers? Do they not have a right to profess a religion? Of course they do. Privately, they can have their own opinions and beliefs as they wish. They may manifest those in private. That's what the law is there for. But in public, they must act in an institutional and neutral way. And again, I repeat, a civil worker must avoid division in society. In contrast, they must promote teamwork and the well-being of everybody in the state which they represent. Now, I want to show two positive cases, and I share this from my point of view. Not all civil workers are like this. not all have acted like this. There have been acts of respect to the freedom of speech and religious freedom from civil workers, including collaboration and different efforts from different churches or denominations. One of them is the case of Margarita Arellanes. She's a mayor in Monterrey, and she participated in an effort called Evangelical Christians Organized in May of 2013, because there was a tough situation in Monterrey, and as you know, this is a border town that has a high delinquency and deaths and homicide. Now, this group organized an event to pray for the state, for the country, and Margarita Arellanes was there and she represents a different religious denomination from what this group represents. She was there, she prayed with them and supported them to be a part of this effort that this group had started to help the country. Now, this action had strong positive repercussions in Monterrey because it shows, and we have data that shows that, according to this chart, that deaths were decreased in the last 3 years. And when this occurred, when this event happened, when the prayer service happened, all these numbers went down. And also, another positive case is Cesar Duarte, who is a governor in Chihuahua, and he also participated out of his own will with the Catholic Church in April 2013. This governor, from a different political party, the Democratic Party in Mexico, and I do not know his religious affiliation, but he and his family supported this Catholic church. Both examples are positive and do not weaken their beliefs, because we're not talking about a specific religion. This is from their personal title. These two examples, I think, show respect to the freedom of religion and freedom of speech and collaboration with other religious denominations who are looking for solutions to problems that affect everybody. As you know, Mexico has been hit hard by organized crime, over 100,000 deaths to date. Cartels, something that public power has not been able to fix on its own, and there's the participation from the churches, the participation from different denominations, and their willingness and desire to solve this problem. What are the attitudes of these civil workers in these different projects? What do I get as a conclusion? Civil workers must respect the opinions of all religions and groups, regardless of whether they agree with their beliefs. They must look for dialogue, not disqualification and division. Civil workers must recognize different churches also have desires to fix problems that affect everybody, and to support them as they exercise their religious freedoms to pray to God, to serve their family and countries. There was a lot of people who criticized these two civil workers who said they had worked against their religions, but they didn't act as civil workers, but they acted out of their own free will. But they can also be humble and also ask for help from God. So, my dear friends, state and society, we can solve these problems that affect everybody. Let's not be afraid to invoke and call upon God to help us. I think He's always willing to help us. Thank you.
Buenas tardes.
Good afternoon. With deep gratitude, I with honest integrity and a very kind invitation that I don't deserve, that has been extended by the International Center for the Studies of Right and Religion, of this unique institution, and to discuss some aspects of the protection and acknowledgement in Venezuela of the freedom of cult as a human right, essentially from the perspective of the constitutional doctrine from the high, especially from the doctrine or the constitutional right. At the same time, I appreciate their acknowledgement and all the efforts that are put into this symposium, and especially to the warm hospitality, and especially to the friendship that I have been able to find in each one of you. In Venezuela, the right to freedom of cult and religion implies the range of constitutional freedom, even with the important point of view that Marcos contributed, and it approved a discussion in the Congress, but because of political differences, haven't been able to been approved. And our constitution that was approved in a and they determine and consecrated the right of a cult in terms of that I'm going to explain it now. In Article 59 of the Constitution of the Republic of Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela, all people have the right to profess their religious faith and cults and to manifest their beliefs in private or in public, through the teaching or other practices, as long as they don't oppose the moral, the good traditions, and public order, and they guarantee in the same way the independence and of the churches and religious expressions. And the father and the mother have the right for their children to be taught religious lessons that agree with their convictions. And it doesn't either avoid that this law can be exercised by their own rights. And it's not an isolated disposition, but it also acknowledges that the Republic of Venezuela has been with the protection of human rights as the universal protection. And therefore, with the consecration and ratification of their human rights as an and in which is interrelated with the rights and with the objection of conscience, has led that all of this, that Venezuela has ratified the Pact of International Rights, and this prohibits the religious discrimination, and there is a special situation in Venezuela, and obviously is the some of you acknowledge that the Venezuela in the last year denounced the pact, international pact of international rights, civil and international rights, and you might be wondering how is this going to be in many of the aspects of in the, that was the Inter-American Convention. You are right, it wasn't in that one. Thank you for the correction. And they guarantee the freedom of religion and that end up being applicable in the international right, in this constitutional text. And I would like to say that every disposition establishes that the enunciation of rights and guarantees that are implied in the Constitution and the international instruments of on human rights shouldn't be understood as the denial of the rights that are not expressed in themselves. We can say that this ratification of the United Nations in regard to the themes related to the topics related to discrimination, religious discrimination or beliefs, in other positive aspects, obviously offers a list, a very general list of the human rights, especially when they precise what does it imply, the the right of freedom of religion without losing the view or the vision of the academic point of view, which is being pointed out in the Constitution and the human rights and the compared rights. In particular, I consider very important to take into account the reach that this resolution has in the concept of intolerance and the convictions, understanding as all distinction or preference founded in the religion or in the convictions and with can be in the acknowledgement and the enjoyment or the human rights and the fundamental freedoms. And it's also worth to mention the Article 3 of this resolution that it determines, from my point of view, with sensibility, that discrimination between human beings because of religion or convictions constitutes a true offense to the human dignity and denial of the principles of the United Nations letter or that has been that should be condemned as a violation of the human rights and with the declaration of the human universal human rights. And as evidently we is an obstacle for the friendly and peaceful relationships among nations. In this order, within the pronouncements dictated by the Supreme Court, it was pretended to have a contribution in regard to the Supreme Court in Venezuela. We see that, or I need to clarify, that it's very important to take into account that the 335 of the Constitution, all this laws that they dictate as the last interpreter of the Constitution, they are considering the link not just for the rest of the all the Supreme Courts of the Republic. And so we have to, as we have this, there is something that has to be for all the legal power in Venezuela. We need to specify the definition of this Supreme Court when, at the same time, they point out from the Organization of the United Nations, within which they point out the article that points out the respect to the freedom of expression and the equality of in religion, and that is put on high, or that is clarified, that concept of tolerance and the respect and the acceptance and the appreciation of diversity of the cultures of our world and our ways to express and the ways as human beings that are fostered, and the openness and the freedom of expression of religion and conscience, and a determinant in that order. The tolerance consists in the harmony of the difference, that the same doesn't just constitute the moral freedom, but also in this way to substitute the war culture for culture of peace. And in this tolerance, in the same interpretation that this room, the responsibility that sustains the human rights, in which it has been the culture pluralism, democracy, the which is very important, that all people are free to adhere to their own convictions, accepting that each that the rest can, has to that they shouldn't impose their beliefs to the others. And within this context, and if they are in their constitutional rights, in the international right and internal right, with the Republic that is the source of hierarchy in that are subscribed and ratified by Venezuela and that they have been expressed in the same hierarchy of the Constitution that are prevalent in these treaties and at the point that they can be established in the Venezuelan. And in this way, we find that in our country, there is the exists the obligation of the state to make sure that all the measures needed to prevent and eliminate all types of discrimination founded in the beliefs that it established by Article 21st, what is their obligation to foster the respect for freedom of religion in any positive or negative attitude according to the situation. And the acknowledgments that so far have been performed are in different constitutional articles, but one of them is especially important and is one that is referred to the mission, Misión Páramo from Venezuela, or the Páramo mission, 1277 of October 2008, whoever is interested in for the Supreme Court has a website with free access from the Republic of Venezuela. In that sentence, it is pointed out in within other aspects as the freedom of religion that has to, that should have or has to have absolute protection from the state of Venezuela in their Article 2 as and therefore, the Venezuelan state has the obligation to ensure the respect because of the immigration that has happened in our country, contributing to the social and economic development of the country through this, and it has to be called, determined as a freedom of religion, but it's a Venezuelan reality, and it's something that we are working on, especially in the Páramo mission. It's recognizing the position and the compared right of of Thomas Jefferson, for example, who pointed out the importance of the separation of a state and religion, and with the vision of having a respectful state and to guarantee the right of freedom of religion. And in this in this letter, as we know, the Jefferson letter, and so and we sustain in our language, of course, neither the states or the federal government can establish a religion as the official one. Neither can they approve a law that support a religion or prefer another religion. And they cannot force one person to an expression against their will, to force them to profess a belief or not religious belief. Nobody can be punished for professing a religion or not, for attending or not religious services, and they cannot impose any tribute for the sustaining of activities or religious institutions or the ways, the forms they adopt for religious practices. Not a state or federal government can participate in organizations of religious groups or vice versa. And this fostering ideas of Thomas Jefferson want to be adapted in the Venezuelan Supreme Court. And that, by the way, it is an instrument that doesn't have a problematic system. It is an a normative instrument, deeply normative, and in the way that is allowed to this, it allows the state the legal power to give the religious freedom to the citizens that can be in this sentence that we are analyzing. It talks about the right of freedom of religion from a very broad aspect, and their negative configuration by not limiting to the freedom of religion and the preferences, and dictating that for the freedom of religion and their internal effect, it pertains or belongs to the individual human being, the right to have their own religious ideas or religious beliefs, even if when they are not expressing in the direct way, the right to express any religion or not religion at all, according to the with the but to profess a specific cult, even the atheist or religious person, and the first that is represented in the freedom of expressing determined religious convictions, and the second for the right of that person to behave according to that religion and to not be obligated to behave according to those beliefs. And another thing that from my humble perspective has to do with a topic that is that is related to the exercise of cult or religion, and the limitation between the prevalence or not from a specific right or not in any conflict. And I don't speak languages, or I'm not opposing the other colleagues that have presented before. And with the Supreme Court, August 14, 2008, was published, and eventual limitation of the exercise of religion because of a problem that a minor faced leukemia. And she was a Jehovah's Witness, and she rejected the treatment without. And this made the Supreme Court to analyze and to consider. This has been greatly debated with a concrete vision, the right to life, towards the right to freedom of religion. In that particular case, as I conclude, the constitutional organization of 1999, and in that order, they precise that our constitutional text is one of the instruments in which the compared constitutional right has fixed limits of this that comes from the Articles 59 and 61 of the Constitution. First of all, the religious conviction cannot be invoked to elude the fulfillment of the law to not allow the exercise of their rights. And if this manifestation affects or if constitutes a crime, the objection of conscience cannot be invoked to elude the fulfillment of the law or to not allow for others to fulfill with this constitution. And because of time, I'm not able to cover this, but they were especially in the medical area and the state, that they could do everything they could to ensure in the best way the objection of conscience of the freedom of cult of this minor who was affected by this disease and her father, to analyze any possibility in the country to have other medical treatment options through the transfusion of homoderived. And in the same way, they conclude that this transfusion or infusion should be scientifically proved and technologically effective to save the life of this patient who opposed to the infusion or transfusion, even against the will of this patient, as long as the right of life is erected in this in the Venezuelan right, respecting any opposition that can come out of this situation as a legal establishment, as a For example, a constitutional provision in Venezuela, the death penalty, and other regimens that are put as the right to life as a permissibility of the state, and to protect the right of other rights with the indifference of the result, moral results of an action or a omission that can erase the exercise of the right to life and the fundamental right, and that can come up with pondering with a special reference to the freedom of cult with the constitutional room, the limit to freedom of religion as a human right that it cannot be discussed, that he should be appreciated in every case, and all of those should be derived in the same order, in the public order, that it shouldn't be in a different notion that can be punished by the laws, but and that should be conceived, the possibility that such limitation doesn't provide another limitation in the situation that has been imposed to someone without the finality being or not being restrictive. And therefore, in this summary, in terms of the freedom of religion in Venezuela as a right constitutionally recognized, and I conclude my presentation thanking your patience and attention.
We are grateful to the four professors for their presentations. Last night in our presentations and today we have heard a few different philosophers. To me it was very interesting, but today we have seen that more in practice there are challenges, and it makes me think of a saying from a friend in Peru. He says that in Peru there are two types of problems: the ones that get solved by themselves and those that don't have any solution. And I hope that's not the case. That's why we're here, to learn one from another, different solutions to different issues about liberty, about human rights. There's no time right now for a debate, but we ask that during our lunch we can start how to go to lunch. We are going to leave this room and we're going to walk to the other side of the building. It's not too far. If anybody needs help, you can take a bus. But it's going to be a really pretty walk, I assure you.